29th, 2014. This is episode 4.9 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Today's death: Mike Royko, who died April 29th, 1997. Royko left the Air Force in 1952 and began covering Cook County politics. At the age of 32, he was writing 5 columns a week for the Chicago Daily News. Studs Terkel, when asked to explain Royko's productivity, said simply, "He is possessed by a demon." Royko went to the Chicago Sun-Times when the Daily News shut down, but he left for the Chicago Tribune in 1984 when Rupert Murdoch bought the paper and offended all of Royko's sensibilities. Royko's style was fast and funny, often talking through stories with fictional characters, most famously Slats Grobnik. He was also a tortured fan of the Chicago Cubs, about whom he wrote regularly. You can still find Royko's work in his 11 books, including his seminal work Boss, about Mayor Richard Daley, and also on the walls of the Billy Goat Tavern on Lower Wacker. He died at the age of 64 of a stroke caused by a brain aneurysm. Here in Athens, though, it is merely Tuesday. I'm Will Leach. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. I apologize for being away for a week now. I was in Matteson, Illinois, visiting my family, my parents, while letting their grandson run around in the treehouse that his grandfather made for him. And apparently that treehouse, the amount of energy it took to build that treehouse is, there's not enough energy left to run adequate wireless to run even a basic podcast. So thank you for Jeb Lund for filling in for me for a day with a good podcast about hockey. We have another podcast about hockey tomorrow, actually, so it's a hockey week. But today, I'm back. We'll be back to 4 shows again a week next week. We're only going to go 3 this week. But today is a fun one because we're going to look at the NBA playoffs with Lee Ellis of the Starters on NBA TV. I'm not going to ask him to go girls, though it's like every single time I see the title of that TV show, I imagine him saying it. So if you're a fan of the Starters, you know Lee. He is great, and I am delighted to have him on. First off, Lee, I am very honored to have you on. As I think anyone listening to this show knows, I'm a huge fan of the Starters slash, I feel, I was going to say the earlier name. I feel like I just can't say it. I know it's a contractual thing for you guys, but I feel like to keep the brand going, I won't even say the previous name. It's only the Starters. Are you having fun over there? How's the first year in the new digs going?
It's been great. It's been very busy, very hectic. A lot of work, a lot of change in our, you know, professional life and our sort of personal and private lives as well, moving our families down. But it's been fantastic. I mean, really, I really enjoy having all the access to the resources that we have down here. You know, when we talk about something on the show, you know, it can be from the 1980s or 1990s, and we can bring it up and we can actually see the video of what we're talking about. So, you know, those sorts of things really make a difference to the show and to the product, because last year, especially, it was primarily audio. We did, for the regular season, have a video show. But this year, it's been everything. We've got the podcast going, we've got the TV show going, and it really makes a difference when everyone knows that if you talk about a player, let's say a Michael Jordan dunk, whatever it is, and you actually have access to that footage and you can show it and you can really point out what it is you're trying to say, those sorts of things just really contribute to the show and I think make for a better product. I mean, there's definitely been challenges, of course, because, you know, we started, or the guy started as a podcast, and there's been a change because for the listening audience, it is different at the moment. We don't have the same effects that we did last year. We don't have the drops and things like that going where Matt used to drop those into the show. Mm-hmm. But it's always, you know, it's always an adjustment that you have to make. And there throughout the season, I think we've improved, and I think we've still shown that the podcast audience is still extremely important to us. But at the same time, we're making a TV show as well. So, you know, there's always changes and there's always things that you have to, adjust as you're going. But I think overall, as the season's gone on, everyone's enjoyed it. And, you know, it's been a great season as well. That's what's really helped. The basketball's been fantastic.
I'm curious how the transition was just for you guys hanging out with all the people at the studios. You know, one of the things I have always loved about the show is, you know, it's not just 3 former athletes yakking about basketball and talking about whatever that show is that's on NBA TV sometime where it has all the former athletes in a room and they all just tell old stories and then Reggie Miller says something and everyone moves on from that. I feel like one of the things I love about the show is it's you guys, like, it's relatable people talking about it. But how do people treat you there? Do you know, nobody's giving you wedgies or putting you in lockers or anything, right?
No, I mean, I think the thing that is great for us is that people who are watching or listening, they realise that you don't necessarily have to be a former athlete to make it or to get to this level in this field. And I think that's what's really, really encouraging because, you know, none of us obviously played in the NBA. None of us really played at a high level of basketball, but we all did play. So we all understand the game and we all, you know, we still play now as well. And so we all understand how the game works. But we're not, we have a different angle. We are coming to you from a fan's point of view. And that's how, that's all we are. You know, we all grew up watching the game and loving the game. And everyone's got an opinion and everyone's got something to say. And so for us to be in this position, I think it really shows that anybody out there, if you have a dream and a passion and you really want to chase after it, you know, you can reach a level like we are right now on NBA TV. And, I mean, that's great. And it's funny, I mean, we still, you know, we meet first thing here in the morning to discuss the show and to get ready for the show. And, you know, it's, occasionally we've seen Shaq walking along or Charles Barkley come in and sat down and had a chat to us and stuff. And it's kind of surreal, but at the same time, we don't necessarily look at them then as like, well, that's Charles Barkley Hall of Famer. We kind of look at him as like, well, he's almost a work colleague of ours at the moment. So, you know, for us just to be around these guys, it's amazing, but at the same time, it's not like we were just plucked off the street and said, hey, guys, put a show together. You know, it's been growing and it's been forming over a number of years. And so it feels great, and it's a really good position we're in right now.
So I always wonder about this about all you guys during the playoffs. Are you getting any sleep?
Well, you have to be selective with your sleep, yes, that's for sure. It's tough. I mean, I know that personally I love it when there's a lot of 7 or 8 o'clock starts because, you know, they're over by sort of 10:30, 11 o'clock. And sometimes when you see the Clippers Warriors, for example, it starts at 10:30 East Coast time, you're like, oh, my God. But, I mean, for me, you know, I can't stay up all night and watch all those. I have to sort of either watch the first half at night, go to bed, and then try to watch the second half in the morning. I mean, because you're tired, so you're not taking in the game as well either. So you have to find a way so that you're watching the game with your eyes as fresh as possible. And it's difficult, but, you know, at the same time, it's not a bad problem to have either.
All right, so what has been so far in these playoffs, what has been the thing that's surprised you the most? Was there a series that, on one hand, you know, seed-wise, it would seem that Atlanta doing this would be the most surprising thing, but again, Indiana's had whatever in the world has been going on with him going on as well. What's the thing that's jumped out at you so far in these playoffs as a story that you really just couldn't have seen coming?
I guess it's the fact that the Dallas Mavericks led the San Antonio Spurs until Monday night. They're 2-2 now in that series. I don't think I certainly didn't give the Mavericks any chance of even taking a game off San Antonio because San Antonio had their number all season long. Dallas had such a slog just to get to the playoffs. And once they got there, you figured that San Antonio, who, you know, they'd been planning for this Spurs basically since Ray Allen hit that three-pointer in Game 6 of last year. They were ready to go. And the fact that Dallas came in, won a game in San Antonio, then won the second, yeah, or the, you know, game 3 at home in Dallas was incredible. And, I mean, the San Antonio Spurs should get out of this series. I think they're going to survive it. But really, they've been pushed already so far to the point where, you know, they're probably not the favourites to win anymore. Who is a favourite is very hard to say because no team is really, I guess Miami got past Charlotte quite comfortably, but that was no real surprise there, especially when Al Jefferson wasn't there for game 4. But at the moment, it's very, very wide open, and it's depending on the matchup, depending on the seed, you just don't know who's going to get out of each round. And, you know, you talk about the Indiana Pacers, you know, they're in real trouble right now. You know, down 3-2, game 6 in Atlanta, that's going to be very, very tough for them. They're not dead yet, but my God, they're on life support.
Yeah, you know, and you've been, you know, in Atlanta. I've been in Athens for this year, but I can't say it necessarily improved the number of times or my greater understanding of the Hawks as a franchise, other than the weird time when Drew McGarry took over and sang the national anthem. Is it just that they're playing the Pacers? Are they doing anything better? Is this anything you could have seen going forward, or did they just happen to catch the right team at the right time?
I think it's a combination. I think the fact that Indiana kind of fell away in the last probably 2 months of the season was the best matchup for Atlanta. But let's give credit to Atlanta. They've played really, really well. Jeff Teague has been fantastic. Because Jeff Teague, early in the season, there was talk of him making maybe the All-Star team, and then he kind of dropped off a little bit. But then he caught fire again at the end of March, early April. And, I mean, if you are going to make the playoffs as the 8th seed, you really want to come in flying, and they weren't necessarily flying, but they were certainly playing probably their best basketball of the season, while Indiana was playing their worst. So, you know, the three-point shot has been falling last night. Kyle Korver and Mike Scott were fantastic for the Hawks. You know, that really is what's been causing Indiana a lot of problems this series. And for the Pacers, I mean, they just seem to have lost their identity. Early on in the season, they were unbeatable defensively. They were so strong. Everything worked for them. Their offense was working. Their defense was just impenetrable. And right now, they just seem lost. And Roy Hibbert, I mean, he's a fantastic player. He was an all-star this year. But he's just lost his way. And I don't know how he's going to get that back in the playoffs. He's only potentially got one game left to do it now, and the Pacers need something desperately from him. But, you know, the thing about this series as well is whoever gets out of this faces the winner of Chicago-Washington. So you must answer yourself, Bill Hawks, you could possibly make the Eastern Conference Finals with a record when you enter the first under 500. I mean, I guess that's great for basketball that you can still make it when you have such a bad season, in the numbers-wise. But that just shows how good the league is right now, that there's a lot of parity, and any team really is a chance to beat any other team, given any of the circumstances.
Yeah, I feel like that Chicago-Washington series is weird because, you know, by the end of the at the end of the regular season, you know, you were hearing all this. I think Howard Beck wrote a great piece about why the Bulls were doing what they were doing, and it really felt like the Bulls had this kind of momentum and were in a good place. And then the Wizards have kind of blitzed them a little bit. And it is strange. I think Simmons wrote about this last week, that the Wizards legitimately feel like they could end up, after being out of the playoffs for so long and not really doing anything, in the Eastern Conference Finals if everything falls right. What's Washington doing in that series, or maybe what's Chicago not doing?
The thing about that series, I thought the Bulls had the experience, and most importantly, they had defense. And we know that in the playoffs, defense wins, and Chicago jumps to those guys. Such a fantastic defensive unit there. I thought John Wall and Bradley Beal, young guys, fantastic offensive players, but I thought they were just going to get overwhelmed in the playoffs in their first appearance. But they've proven that to be completely wrong. Bradley Beal's been fantastic. John Wall, they don't know how to stop John Wall. They've had Kirk Heinrich on him. DJ was saying there's no point in having him on at all because John Wall's just far too quick for him. And, of course, the big one has been Nene has made Defensive Player of the Year Joakim Noah look ordinary. And that's a huge, huge thing because Joakim Noah he is such a good defender and such an important part of what Chicago does. And Nene has just bullied him around and just toyed with him. And the fact that the Nene got suspended for Game 4, I thought, okay, well, there's the Bulls' chance to really get back on track here. And Marcin Gortat was fantastic inside. It does still think Valus Boozer was as great as he was for Chicago. They haven't got Chicago. The biggest question for them coming in was always going to be their offense. Could they score enough points? And the fact is that in Game 3, Mike Dunleavy led them with 35 points, hit 8 3-pointers. If Mike Dunleavy, you know, with all due respect to Dunleavy, if he's your sort of guy who's going to get you 35 points and a win, you're not going to win too many games like that. So it's a great story for the Wizards. I'm really, really happy for them because, you know, John Wall was an all-star this year. He's been motivated. He said at the start of the season he wrote playoffs on his shoes. He was determined to get there. And they didn't just make the playoffs and were happy to show up. They've really gone on and really shown that they will probably get out of this series. I can't really see the Bulls coming back to win this one now. So that's fantastic for them, and especially for Washington. You know, they've had a lot of drama over the last few years, you know, obviously with Gilbert Arenas and all the situation there. It hasn't been a pretty situation. Now, if you're a Wizards fan, that backcourt again, Wall and Beal, there's a lot to look forward to. Marcin Gortat, they picked him up just before the start of the season in the trade. Kind of a salary dump there by the Suns. They've got him. He's been fantastic. Hopefully they can keep him next year. And again, Nene's problem is what got him ejected in Game 3. It was kind of a bit of a silly thing that he did. You expect someone, a veteran, to not make such a decision in the playoffs, and it cost him. Unfortunately for him and the Wizards, it didn't cost them the game against the Bulls in Game 4. But there's a lot to look forward to. Randy Whitman, I'm not sure if he's going to coach next year. He's out of contract, and he was the sort of guy who was reluctant to take that job in the first place. So the Wizards may look for a more experienced guy. But you know what? If they make the Eastern Conference Finals, which is a real, real chance, then maybe Whitman will decide that this is a good opportunity for him.
The Heat did their swept through, and there was nothing too much going on there other than that really terrifying moment last night where it looked like LeBron had hurt his knee in a serious way, which is like, I was like, oh, great, so the Wizards are actually going to the finals. Like, I actually briefly had that thought when it looked like that was a really serious injury. It looks like it's going to be okay, but I'm curious for all of you guys for that the other series left going in the Eastern Conference. The Raptors have not won a playoff series since 2001. They're 2-2 now. Is it weird for everybody not to be there? Is it? How's it going with that series?
We all feel like Rudy Gay, you know. As soon as the Raptors traded Rudy Gay, they got better. We all leave Toronto, and the Raptors get better. So, look, it's great to see the Raptors doing well. And really, I mean, they're in tight. Obviously, Game 5 is so important for them because it's back in Toronto. It's on Wednesday night. If they lose that, then it's going to be tough for them to then win the series because Game 6 will obviously be back in Brooklyn. But the Raptors showed in Game 4, they had a backbone. And that's something that they've never really had. The Raptors always lose when the game's close. Whenever the game is tight, they always seem to make a turnover, miss a shot, leave a guy for a wide-open three-pointer, something like that. But they actually held firm against an experienced Brooklyn Nets team. And that was a very, very encouraging sign. Kyle Lowry's been fantastic. DeMar DeRozan has grown throughout the playoffs. His first game, you could tell it was his first game. He took some bad shots, didn't do the things he was supposed to do. But since then, he stepped up and really started knocking down the big shots. And Jonas Valanciunas has been fantastic as well. He's starting to understand that he can use his body to out-body guys like Kevin Garnett. Garnett's just not the same intimidating force that he's been throughout his career. So, there's lots of things for the Raptors to look forward to, but they just have to close out Game 5 because, it's just Raptors fans know that if they have to climb over that mountain one more time, they might not get over it this time because the Nets, every game has been fairly close, and if the Nets can keep it to the pace that they like, I think they can close out Game 6. But, Game 5 is just so important. The fans, there's probably going to be 15,000 fans at Maple Leaf Square ready to cheer and celebrate and all that. But I just hope, there's a few nervous Raptors fans in Atlanta, that's for sure right now.
I'll confess, I didn't know that the Raptors had that insane of a fan base. I knew that they were intense. I didn't really know that. I've really been pretty impressed in general with Raptors fans in the series.
Yeah, the thing about Toronto is they are dying to celebrate a championship. It's been 20 years since the Blue Jays had their last success, and the Maple Leafs don't seem to ever be able to get it together. So the Raptors, in some ways, are the best chance for Toronto to celebrate it. And I was there in 2007 and 2008, the last time the Raptors were in the playoffs against New Jersey, ironically, and the Orlando Magic. And honestly, it's like a soccer crowd there during the playoffs. Like, everyone cheers every single basket, and everyone is just so ready for the Raptors to finally, make a stand and actually get somewhere in the playoffs. Because, you talk about the last time they won a playoff series. That's also the only time they won a playoff series back in 2001. And so it's been so long. Obviously the Vince Carter days when the Raptors were actually respected, I guess, by the U.S. audience. And since then, they look at the Raptors as a joke, and rightly so, because the Raptors rarely make the playoffs. And when they have gotten there in the past, they haven't done much. So now they've got a chance to gain a little bit of respect, and the fans just want to see someone. They just want to see them get into the next round. It's a bit of a death march anyway into the next round, because you're playing a well-rested Miami Heat team who's got home court advantage. So it's going to be tough for either the Nets or the Raptors. But, for Toronto fans, they just want to at least have that one series that they've got out of and they've survived, and then you just never know what might happen in the second round. I don't think either of those teams are going to get past the Heat, but you never know. You take a game or two off them the way these playoffs are going, and things, just crazy things happen. So, if the Raptors fans have that to hang their hat on, then that'll be something for them to finally celebrate at least.
Yeah, the Raptors, I find myself really cheering for the Raptors, because also, as I've heard, fuck Brooklyn. That's what I've heard.
That's great. A general manager like, I know he got fined and the kids around, so obviously it's something like that, but you can't have a general manager cussing and cursing. We've got Rob Ford for all that sort of stuff, but at least to show the passion, that's what you want to see from a general manager, not some guy who's hidden in his office wearing a suit and you never see him. He's out there. He's one of the fans during the series.
It was awesome. I was stunned. It was great. I was like, it made me feel kind of old, actually, that my first reaction was, oh, he shouldn't say that. And then I was excited about it. I'm like, oh, no, yeah. I've lost that cool part of me that just got excited about it. Now I'm worried about how it's going to affect his job, workplace, environment. Like, no, just be happy for him and enjoy it. So, we talked a little. Okay, now go over the Western Conference. We talked a little about that Spurs Mavericks series. For a while there last night, it really looked like the Mavericks really might have this thing by the throat, but then it kind of turned on them. Is this the Spurs series now?
I think so. I mean, going back to San Antonio for game five, obviously, I think the Spurs, they've probably been rattled. You know, I guess if you're using boxing parlance, you know, they took a blow, but they'll probably go back to their corner, regroup, and they'll come out and they'll punish Dallas, I think. I mean, that's what I expect to happen. But then again, I expected the Spurs to sweep this series. I mean, Rick Carlisle, I think, really is the key to this series. His approach, his game tactics and his strategy has just, it's outworked Greg Popovich, which is something that rarely, rarely happens. In the past, you know, you look at San Antonio, they always get contributors from everybody. No one, you look at the box score and you see a guy scoring 35 points. It's always, you know, 17 points for Duncan, 18 for Parker, 22 for Manu Ginobili, something like that. But the Dallas Mavericks have actually done that this series. Monte's been good. Dirk hasn't been that good by his standards. You know, he hasn't scored a lot of points. Sean Marion came out and scored 20 points in one game. Devin Harris off the bench has been a contributor. Jose Calderon. All these other guys have sort of stepped up and just chipped in where they've needed to. So it's really, you know, San Antonio have been beaten at their own games by just the teamwork that Dallas have shown. And also, defensively, Dallas has been very, very good. They've sort of gotten out onto the perimeter early on San Antonio because San Antonio like to shoot the three ball. Dallas have got out there, defended that. And it's kind of just thrown San Antonio off again. Also, Tony Parker's had a very weird series. You know, he started off really well. And then in game three, particularly, we pointed out this out on the show yesterday, he really went missing and he's not injured or anything like that. He just seemed to lose his way during a game. And, you know, he's very, very important to them because he is still the motor that drives them. I mean, he's a fantastic point guard, still, in my opinion, underrated. I mean, you know, you look at Chris Paul, who's probably the best point guard in the league, but Tony Parker's right there next to him. But again, you're playing San Antonio. You don't get that same recognition. Also, Tony Parker doesn't play the amount of minutes a lot of the other, you know, main point guards play in their team because that's the San Antonio Spurs way. So Dallas, you know, they've got their work cut out for them still. But again, the way they've played so far in the series, you know, game four could have easily been theirs as well. They make a play at the end. They win that game. They're up 3-1. But then again, game three, they got kind of lucky with Vince hitting that three-pointer. So this series is going to be could come down literally to just one or two baskets at the end of the game. Obviously, the Mavs need one or two of those to go their way to extend the series. But I would be surprised if the Spurs don't just close it out from here. They're just, you know, again, they're a better team. They're better prepared. They're fresher. They've got their better legs. But, you know, they haven't shown their best so far. And now maybe they've just got themselves back on track.
I loved that Carter shot, except for everything except for the first guy there to congratulate him was Cuban.
Yeah,
and that seemed too much.
Well, yeah, that's Mark Cuban though. I mean, that's one thing. Talking about Masai Ujiri for the Raptors, you know, swearing with the Brooklyn thing. But the one thing I love about Mark Cuban, he sits there with a T-shirt at the baseline every game. You know, he cheers and celebrates every Mavericks basket, and he gets upset when a bad call goes. You know, like he doesn't. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and I really like that. If I was a Mavericks fan, I want to see my owner there. I don't want to see, you know, like for the Raptors, for example, you don't really know who owns the team. It's Bell and Rogers combined, and then Larry Tannenbaum has a stake as well. But for the Mavericks, there's no doubt. Mark Cuban owns that team. He wants them to win every game. He gets upset when a call goes against him, and, you know, he's a fan. And you're right. I mean, it's more a players and a coach's moment. You want to see them sort of celebrate together. But at the same time, Mark Cuban, you know, that's why people love him. That's why people hate him. He's out there. He's right in the middle of it all. And, you know, it's certainly, I think it's good for the NBA, though, to have owners that are just right involved there and, you know, in the middle of it all.
Yes, but as we will get to in a later series, not too in the middle of it all. All right, so it's funny, you know, when I made my, I feel like I got, other than the Heat, I've gotten completely the Eastern Conference wrong. Everything's tied in here in this side except for the Rockets and Portland. And I got this one wrong too. I really thought Houston would make a lot of fit there, but Portland's really, they're up 3-1 and they look in, if it makes sense, in a position that almost feels even stronger than 3-1.
It does. It really does. I mean, it could have been, I guess, a sweep. I mean, there's always could-haves and should-haves in the playoffs, but the way that they have just outclassed Houston has been amazing. I had Houston winning this series in five games, so it just shows how much I know about what's going on out there. Because, you know, when you analyze a series at the start, you look at how teams won throughout the season and where they're leading and what categories they're strong in. And Houston scored a lot of points in the paint, and Portland don't defend a lot of points well in the paint. And for me, in the playoffs, it's like, okay, that's your strategy. You know, you don't want to come down and rely on sort of you know, a different game plan. You want to bound the ball inside. Dwight Howard's too big and too strong for Robin Lopez, I thought. And then you've got James Harden on the perimeter. You've got Chandler Parsons on the perimeter. You know, you've got Omer Asik, who statistically was a good defender of LaMarcus Aldridge this season. And I look at Damian Lillard and I think, I love Damian Lillard, but I put the sort of rookie playoff nerves on him as well. And I thought the Blazers are going to struggle. They just don't have enough offense, and I don't think they can defend the Rockets well enough. But again, LaMarcus Aldridge came out and just absolutely blitzed Asik and the Rockets. And, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge obviously read all the reports saying that Asik's going to defend him and he's not going to be able to make his shots. And he got ready and he prepared for that. And that's you know, really good scouting work and good prep work from the Blazers to say, well, we know how they're going to defend you, so you have to figure out a way to beat this guy. And it helped that he was just red hot in those first two games in Houston, hit basically every shot that he took. And, you know, for the Rockets, Dwight Howard, the numbers are fine there, but really he hasn't been able to impose himself on Robin Lopez in the way that he should. We saw in game two where Dwight scored the first 13 points, just every move, they threw the ball into him. You know, he twisted and turned, scored dunks and layups and everything. But really he hasn't done that again throughout the series. And you wonder why, especially when you have James Harden, who can't shoot right now. He's just lost his, you know, it's one of those things, momentum. It can affect you for a day or a couple of days during the regular season. But when you're in a playoff series, it can affect you for the entire playoff series. And, you know, James Harden scored a lot of points, but his efficiency has been terrible. And the big problem as well with James Harden is whatever he scores, he gives back double on the defensive end as well. He's such a lazy defender that Wesley Matthews has just exposed him several times. And other Blazers have as well. They just know that James Harden ball watches far too much. His man can run around, do whatever he wants. He can go backdoor for layups and cuts, or he can just sit out in the perimeter knowing that he's going to get a good, clean, open look. So, yeah, the Rockets are in real trouble in this series. They're heading home for Game 5. I do expect them to win Game 5. I just think that they know that it's obviously must-win now. They haven't got another opportunity to lose. And I think they'll probably win that, but I really think Portland's going to close it out in 6 because they've just been so good. You know, the best thing, I guess, for Portland is we've barely talked about Damian Lillard this series, and he's been fantastic. You know, he's been so good, but LaMarcus has taken all the headlines away from him. You know, Wesley Matthews has done a great job as well. So, you know, to have basically your second all-star in Damian Lillard not even really get amongst the headlines and your team's up 3-1, that's a really good sign going forward. So, you know, for Portland, hopefully they can close it out and they can move on, because it'd be great to see them advance, especially after they, you know, they started off the season really well. They kind of hit a bit of a rough patch. And then again, most people, all of us included here at the Starters, had Houston winning the series quite comfortably. So it'd be good for the Blazers to prove us all wrong.
All right, then we have the Thunder Grizzlies as the parlance. That it's funny, even that series, it's weird, the ongoing debate of Westbrook and Durant, and I love the idea that basically Oklahoma City, it's just a great example of how over years talent accumulation is not actually enough in a lot of ways. It feels like you know, before it was how's Harden going to fit with all these guys scoring. Now it's how's Westbrook and Durant going to fit with being the scorers that they do. And it feels like other teams figure that out in a way that they don't, if that makes sense. Is that a coaching issue? Is that just the way that those players are? I can never quite figure out why Oklahoma City never quite makes that leap forward I expect them to.
Yeah, and I expected them to as well this season. I think I was surprised that the Grizzlies led this series 2-1 and almost had it 3-1 at one stage there as well. You know, it took overtime for the Thunder just to pull even. I'm not really sure what's going on there with the Thunder, because last season the Grizzlies took them out in 5 games, but obviously Westbrook wasn't there. This season, when you look at it, the Thunder are much better. Westbrook's healthy now. I figured that they were just going to run them out of the gym. And game one, it looked like they were going to do that. You thought, okay, great. This is what we expect to see from the Thunder now, that they've been to the finals before. They had the injury last year, but now they're already there. They're, for a young team, they're actually quite experienced in the playoffs. You know, so they've been there. So you expected them to really just trample the Grizzlies and move on comfortably. But the Grizzlies have been able to play the grit and grind game that they call it. You know, they get it, make it dirty. They slow the pace down. They bomb the ball inside to Zebo and Marc Gasol and just make it a very, very difficult matchup for Oklahoma City. And I think we saw in game 4 when Reggie Jackson scored 32 points. Scott Brooks knows he needs to get something out of his bench, because their bench was very, very important this season, and they weren't really getting any contribution out of any of those guys for those first 3 games. I felt watching that game that Scott Brooks made such a point of saying, listen, we've got to get Reggie's, got to get him going, because it's important to give that guy confidence. He's still a young guy. He's still figuring it out. He needs to get touches, and he needs to show that we have belief in him. When he comes in off the bench, he's going to be out there to score the ball, and that's what he did. He scored, you know, 32 points was a pretty good 32. Also, it helped that Serge Ibaka was back there defensively. Serge is a fantastic shot blocker and rim protector, but he's been kind of outplayed, and I think what happens is Zach Randolph manages just to outbody Serge Ibaka, and Serge Ibaka is more an athletic defender rather than a body defender. He likes to come over, you know, and be that second defender coming over blocking shots from the weak side or something like that. Whereas Zebo, he prefers to out-muscle guys. He loves Kendrick Perkins because he can really get into a body-on-body duel there and just you do those little floaters and those little flip shots that I don't know how they don't get blocked more often, because Zebo barely gets off the floor. You know, but it's an effective game plan. And then Mike Conley, another guy who, he's been such a good player. He's just such a great system player for Memphis. He controls their pace really well. He's capable of shooting a three-pointer when they need it, but he's never the guy who's going to go out there and try to score 40 points, because he knows that's not his role. He feeds those guys, Zebo and Marcus Hull. Courtney Lee's actually been a good addition since he came over in the mid-season trade. And they're just a team that's built on defense first, but then they do know how to execute well. Dave Yeager's done a pretty good job with that team as well. They started off a bit slow this season. I thought they were in a bit of trouble. It didn't help when Marcus Hull got injured, and then they seemed to find their way at the right time of the year. So, I think Memphis are going to get out of this series, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to seven.
All right, and then we have the Clippers-Warriors series, the series that that everyone is talking about, but aren't watching, if that makes sense. The fans are watching, but no one else is. At this point, you know, it feels like this series, no matter what happens, is going to get drowned in the Sterling mess a little bit. But it's kind of an awesome series. Like, this was one of the most compelling series going into the playoffs. In the playoffs, anyway, certainly one of the ones that I was most looking forward to. Are the Clippers the better team? Are we waiting for Paul to, you know, Paul famously has a somewhat checkered playoff history. Is this going to come down to Curry hitting a big shot later, or Paul taking over the series? Where does this one stand now? And does the Sterling stuff? I feel like it doesn't really affect what happens on the court, but I feel like it just hovers over the series so much.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's going to be a storyline no matter what happens. You know, and the quicker the NBA can sort of, you know, hand out their punishment. I think Adam Silver's got that press conference this afternoon where he's going to talk about it. The quicker they can sort of wash that out of the series and just concentrate on basketball, the better. I don't know if they're going to be even able to, just because it's such a nasty shadow that's been cast over it. But basketball, you know, aside, I think that Blake Griffin is really the key. You talk about Chris Paul, who does have a checkered playoff history, but Blake Griffin, basically they can't defend him. Golden State haven't got anyone who can defend him. They've tried David Lee, they've tried Draymond Green. They're just not big enough. Blake Griffin's too athletic, he's too strong. He's improved so much this season that he doesn't just have the high-flying dunks and the low-post sort of game anymore. He can knock out, step back and knock down a 15-foot, 20-foot jumper quite comfortably. He can get to the free throw line. And we've seen it in the two big wins. He's had huge games, and it's just they pound the ball into him, and he just overpowers the Golden State Warriors. Game four, I mean, it was a fantastic performance, and finally Steph Curry broke free, because he has been struggling in this series just to have a real Steph Curry game. But once he gets that three-pointer going, I mean, he's got such enormous range on it. He can basically pull up just after halfway, and it's a good shot for him. And when it's dropping, there's not much you can do defensively to stop that. So, but without Andrew Bogut there, I just think the Warriors are going to struggle to defend the rim. And, you know, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan's been very good as well this series. We know he doesn't have much of an offensive game, but he's so long, he's so athletic, that there's no one even able to really contest him for a lot of those rebounds. And his defense has been fantastic as well. Another thing, you know, David Lee at one end is trying to defend Blake a lot of the time, and Blake is just bulldozing his way past him. And then on offense, David Lee is trying to get layups and you know, short-range jump shots, and DeAndre Jordan's there to swat everything he can. So a good thing actually I saw in Game 4 was that the Warriors played a lot more pick-and-roll and got David Lee some of those easier looks, you know, some dunks and some layups that he needs for his confidence to get going as well. So it's definitely, if Steph Curry can light up the Clippers for 35 or 40 again, then absolutely the Warriors have a chance. But I think what we're going to see in Game 5 especially is a much more concerted effort. Doc Rivers said before the start of this series, there is no way Steph Curry is going to beat us. So far, out of the four games, I think three games, the Clippers have done a very, very good job defending him. And I think Doc Rivers, again, is going to focus back on just saying anyone else can beat us. Klay Thompson has been good in this series, but again, they need him to be more aggressive offensively, driving inside more. His defense has been good on Chris Paul as well at times, but I think what Doc Rivers is saying is we'll take our chances that Klay Thompson is going to go cold before Steph Curry is, and that's the key to this series, I think, for the Clippers. But you know, I just hope that, you know, whatever happens, we sort of forget about this whole mess with the owner there, and we just concentrate on the basketball, because these playoffs have been amazing. You know, we've just run through all the series here, and really, apart from Miami and Charlotte, every other series you can make a case that both teams could advance, and that's great for the NBA and as a fan, and you know, for the job that we do here, it certainly gives us plenty to talk about and lots of storylines and intrigue, and you know, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, and I really love the idea that one of the final four series could be Atlanta Washington. Like, I'm kind of obsessed with that idea. I really am. Like, and no offense to either team, I think that's great, but it really is just kind of amazing.
I'm the same, you know. Like, people will say, well, the TV companies won't like that.
Yeah.
But I don't care. I would much rather see something like that, you know, the Hawks and the Wizards battling out. Because for me, as a basketball fan, that's what I want to see. I want to see these teams that traditionally haven't even been close to have a real chance to maybe make the NBA Finals. I think that would just be awesome.
Yeah, I always feel like it's creeping Rovellianism when you when people are like, oh, ABC's not going to be happy with that. Well, I don't think so.
That's
any less fun for me. It always seems kind of a strange. I always feel like people that say they don't really care enough. If that makes sense.
I know. Because the other thing is it does is it gives them other players coming through and free agents and things like that. It says, well, you know, I can sign with these teams that don't have necessarily the same size market, because if you just get the right, if you play well, you get the right coaching system, you know, the right matchup, you can actually have success, and you don't have to be in LA or Miami or Chicago or something like that for it to happen. You know, imagine what it would do as well just if the Atlanta Hawks make the Eastern Conference Finals. It'd just be fantastic.
All right. Well, first off, also one last thing, you gotta give a message to Trey, because I was actually saving Trey for when the Bulls got. I was gonna have him on the podcast, but I was gonna save him until the Bulls made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and played the Heat, which I just assumed was going to happen. So, the heartbreaking that he has with what the Bulls are doing now will only go double.
Yeah, he has been pretty disappointed, because he was pretty confident going into that first round series, but. Yeah, seeing what's happened over these last couple of games, I don't think he thinks he's going to get out of it anymore.
Poor guy. The guy can't catch a break, Trey. all right. Well, thanks, man. I love the show, and I love what you guys are doing. So please keep it up. And it was an honor talking to you. You were great, and I feel like I understand the series a lot better. If you'll let me, I'd love to have you on again sometime.
Absolutely, anytime. Well.
All right. Cool. Thanks, man. Be safe. And I keep forgetting that I live like an hour from you guys. So try to keep the noise down. Some of us are trying to work. And also, I'll holler at you guys next time in town. Thanks again, man. Be safe. And keep up the great work.
Appreciate it.
Take care. All right. Thank you to Lee Ellis. He was great, wasn't he? He's a wonderful complimentary piece on that show. But he was awesome right there. I feel like I could just kind of wind him up and let him go for days. I think we have to do that again, actually. So thank you to Lee Ellis. You can follow him on Twitter. At Lee Ellis, LeighElLis. And, of course, you can watch him on The Starters on NBA TV and download the podcast, which, because I don't get NBA TV, I only am able to listen to the podcast, which, as he says, it is a little different, but it's still great. Like, it's still those guys, and they're still awesome. So, anyway, this has been the Willis Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Wednesday's guest is Joe D'Alessio, I think another four-time guest. I wanted to have him on last week to talk about the hockey playoffs back when my Blues were still in it. I am choking down my pride, and I'm talking to him even though the Blues are now gone. He is a Sports Unearthed hockey writer, also an old colleague of mine at New York Magazine, where he is still employed. So that'll be fun tomorrow. Also, he's a diehard Rangers fan. He's also, of course, an impartial reporter that does not pick sides, but he's also a diehard Rangers fan. And I'm going to be talking to him tomorrow morning. for Wednesday's podcast. And so we'll see. It's possible he may still be drinking. I don't know how it's going to turn out with that game, game six for them tonight. Anyway, so I'll talk to him and you tomorrow.